everybody, and welcome
to 2026.
Woo!
And
Ghoul Society.
Yep.
That's my little sister, Sarah.
And that's my big sister, Jamie.
We are grateful to be recording on the unceded, stolen territories of the Songhees and Esquimalt First Nations and the Lekwungen and Wasanich peoples, whose historical relations with the land continue to this day. As uninvited guests on this land, we are committed to disrupting racism and colonial violence within ourselves, our families, and our communities. By listening to this podcast, you've officially been inducted into the Ghoul Society.
Happy New Year!
Happy New Year! We made it another year.
Yep.
That's all. We were talking about our New Year's before we started recording.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and Sarah got a new tattoo.
I got a new tattoo.
How's it feeling?
It's angry.
Oh, yeah. It's funny because you're reminding me that I had a dream that I got a tattoo.
Oh, really?
But I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that I got this brand new tattoo and I haven't been taking care of it. Probably because you got a new tattoo and...
Probably.
One of my besties got a new tattoo as well, and so I'm just like, tattoos, and I've been looking at tattoos, but
yeah,
that's gonna be a later thing.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, mine was a birthday present, so
yeah, I love that. It's very cute.
Thank you. I think so too.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's up?
Still sick. Somehow.
Still sick. Yeah.
Been sick for like. So long.
Weeks,
month. It's just annoying at this point, you know? It's like, what do I sound like when I'm not congested? I don't know anymore.
I know. I know.
What's it like to not be so phlegmy all the time? I don't know.
I'm also still phlegmy.
It's just
like, I'll
so
be like,
much
oh, what am I choking on? Oh, I'm choking on phlegm. Yeah. And I feel it, and I feel like I hear it also in my voice too.
It's so annoying.
It's so annoying.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, back to work tomorrow for us. The break was nice.
Break was nice.
Though
I feel like it really threw me out of my routine.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Like, I'm just like, what the fuck is going on? And now I have the Sunday scaries.
Yeah, me too. And I'm like, fuck. Now I have to go back to work.
Yeah.
And also it's going to be cray cray at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit.
I mean, I feel like it's that way for everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
When they go back.
It's true. Because everyone's like, okay, what's going on?
How do I even work? How do I do my job?
Yes.
Wait, if any of my coworkers are listening, don't listen to that part.
Sarah, you Skip know forward. How to do your job.
I know.
Skip ahead 30 seconds, please.
I do forget how to do it sometimes, though.
That's okay. You're still learning it. Like, you overall
know
it.
No, I mean, like, if in any job I've had... If I go on a break for a long time, I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, totally.
It makes sense. One job.
Because repetition is the most important part of learning.
Okay, nerd. What else? That's probably it.
Well, I finished knitting this sweater.
You finally finished your sweater. It only took you like 4 months.
Yeah, actually, I realized it only took me 2 months.
Oh.
Well, okay, technically, I started October to November, November to December. Yeah, 2 months.
Yeah.
But it felt like a lifetime.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm really happy with it. I blocked it out. I feel like it looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
The sleeves are just the right length.
Yeah.
They could be a bit shorter, like personally, but I think sometimes they get a bit shorter because the elbow creases. So it's this weird thing. I don't know. It's like they get longer after you block it, then they get shorter because your elbow. Anyway. And then I started a new sweater, but I don't know about the pattern, so I might rip it out and restart from just like the collar area.
Is it color work as well?
No, it's not color work. It's very basic. It's just like so this is called a raglan, when it's like the line goes from your armpit up to your collar.
Yep.
But the raglan on the one that I'm working on right now, I think it's too short. In this area.
Oh,
and so this line is too high up.
Oh.
And then what happens is you get a terrible, like, little fold right here.
Right.
And so I might just try to change the pattern myself.
Right.
But it will just mean that the sleeves are bigger, which I think is fine. Right. By a couple stitches. Anyway, that's the that on that.
Damn.
Yeah. So that's my life. Just knitting.
Cool.
Not really sleeping. It was a full moon last night.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly.
We put our Christmas stuff away yesterday.
Nice. I need to do that.
My house feels empty.
Oh.
Yeah.
We need January decorations.
I know. I'm like, what is the next decoration? Halloween.
Valentine's.
I don't have Valentine's decorations for my house.
Oh, maybe you should get some little hearts. Make some little hearts. Make some pink pom-poms.
And just stick them to the wall?
No, make some,
garlands.
Yeah.
I don't know if Montana would like that.
Oh, okay. Fine, Montana. Whatever. Whatever, then. Well, maybe we should get into it because I have a story for you.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Great.
It's a long one.
It's a little bit longer. I just feel like I did a better job on it.
Good job.
Than maybe the last few ones, you know?
Right, right. New year, longer stories.
That's right. That's our resolution. Okay, so we're going to be transported back in time a little bit.
Okay.
Actually, almost 100 years ago.
Damn.
So put your brain into 100 years ago space. And British. It's going to be British, brother. Okay. Don't worry, I won't do that voice. Okay. On May 10th, 1927, in Westminster, London, a staff member of the Charing Cross Railway Station who worked in the cloakroom had noticed an unpleasant smell left in the luggage department coming from a trunk that was left there at the station 5 days prior. The cloakroom attendant gathered up all his courage and made the decision to open the trunk, and to his horror, inside was a dismembered body of a woman. Immediately, the police were called, and the best police pathologist at the time was called up to start the investigation. To everyone's horror, the public, the country, the same crime was committed again 7 years later at a different train station in a different city. The police force worked these demanding investigations that would shock the country to its core. This is the complex, twist-and-turny story of the UK trunk murders.
Damn!
Yeah, it gets convoluted, so be prepared.
Okay, I'm ready.
I'm going to start with the first one from 1927, and then we'll just kind of go forward.
Okay.
So, back to the police pathologist being called. Or, it's not really this is very old-timey, police pathologist, but this guy's name was Sir Bernard Spilsbury. You might have heard him from, other cases of the time. He had worked on a major case from the early 1900s called the Dr. Drippin case, which is a story that I'd like to tell another day. But Spilsbury was really well known and super good at his job. Mm. So the first step that Spilsbury had was to conduct a post-mortem examination at the Westminster Mortuary of all of the body parts that were found. Spilsbury had in front of him a limbless body with its legs hacked off at the hips, and the arms were also removed from the shoulders. Each piece was wrapped in brown paper and tied up with string and then placed into the trunk, though I believe that the head was still attached to the body in this case. Further, the woman's shoes and handbags were also stuffed into the same trunk. So it's kind of interesting because when I think about trunks.
Yeah, how big is this trunk?
I know. That's the exact same thought that I had this whole time I was working on the story. Is I was like, these must be decently big.
Is it a trunk?
Yeah, but it's a suitcase.
Or is it a suitcase trunk?
It's a suitcase trunk.
It's not you know how there's big trunks?
Yeah. Well, I feel like people did use those big trunks for traveling too. So it might have been that. But I saw a picture of the one from in one of the later cases.
Mm-hmm. And it was a suitcase trunk.
It was small.
What?
But I feel how? I mean, small women probably.
Mm-hmm.
But still. So sure, let's go with maybe it was a bigger trunk.
Yeah.
Because also her shoes and her handbag are in there as well.
Right.
Spilsbury figured that the crime had been committed about 2 to 3 weeks ago, even though the trunk was only at the station for just under a week. He found a label. Yeah. He found a label on the dismembered woman's clothes. And in some articles, I saw that it was on her knickers, which is underwear. For those who don't know. And this label had led the police to a woman named Mrs. Holt, who was living in South Kensington. They asked her if she could identify the body for them, and Holt immediately recognized the woman. So she must have had her head, obviously.
Right.
This woman had worked for Holt as her cook and went by her married name of Mrs. Rolls. Turns out that Mrs. Rolls' real name, like her original name, was Minnie Bonatti. So let's talk about Minnie a little bit. She was in her mid-30s and had been, at the time of her death, working for Holt, as we said, as a domestic servant in Chelsea, England. Before this job, she was married to an Italian man who worked as a waiter, but Minnie seemingly had enough of him as she just kind of left him to start a new life with a man named Mr. Rolls.
Damn.
Hence a new name. Which at first when I saw her name, I was like, is that just because she's like the cook? Like Rolls? Like buns? Oh my God. And I was like, oh no, it's actually someone's name. Yeah. So Minnie worked extremely hard in her life, and while she worked full-time as a domestic servant, it was exhausting and barely paid her way, of course. Mm-hmm. At the time, her wage was around 13 to 20 pounds per year. Per year.
Oh my God.
So what is that? 1 to 2 pounds a month.
What is that today?
Yeah. Do you want to guess?
Like $2,000?
No. Oh. 750 British pounds to 1,200 pounds per year.
Oh.
Yeah, so she's not being paid. And in Canadian money, just so everyone knows, that's about 1,400 to 2,200 per year.
Yeah.
Per year, we're talking.
Yeah.
Right? So she's not making any money. So obviously, she needed to supplement her income, and Minnie really had no other choice but to turn to sex work. This was super common for women in this time, as there was obviously little opportunity for them to move up in the world or move outside of their particular situations due to the intense patriarchal social standards and also the strict class systems of the early 20th century, especially in England. That's the situation that Minnie is in.
Okay.
And of course, within that, she's being put into very precarious moments more often than one would want to be putting themselves in.
Right.
On the night of May 4th, 1927, Minnie was working and she was picked up by a man by the name of John Robinson in an area of Westminster known as Victoria. Actually. The information of this night is obviously like recollected by Robinson himself. So just keep that in mind as I retell the story of what happens, because Minnie is no longer with us, and she is not able to tell the story from her side of things. So Minnie picks up Robinson, or Robinson picks up Minnie, kind of either way, and according to him, the two of them went back to his office to have sex. However, since Robinson was obviously a fucking asshole, which you'll soon learn, an altercation happened after she demanded her money and he refused to give it to her.
Bro.
Yeah. Bro, pay for...
Like after they had a sexual encounter?
I'm not exactly sure.
Or she wanted him to pay up front?
I don't know. I feel like probably after.
Okay.
But...
Either way. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. Okay. Yeah, stupid. He claims that she ran at him, and so then he hit her, causing her to fall and to hit her head on a nearby chair. Then he just left Minnie, assuming she was just unconscious, which is also like, fuck you, you're just gonna leave someone that's unconscious. But when he returned the next morning, because remember, this is like his workplace, she still hadn't moved. So at this point, he realized that she was dead. And following the realization that he killed her, he decided to cut her up and put her body in a trunk.
The fuck?
So I feel like if you accidentally kill someone, you probably should call the police.
Yeah.
Instead of, I don't know, dismembering them.
Yeah, like that's so much worse.
Yeah.
And also, what kind of mind do you have?
To be able to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. It's fucked up.
Okay.
Yeah. So he does that, right? Thankfully, police investigators, through the help of Mrs. Holt, their investigations led them to a Rochester row in Westminster, where detectives interviewed numerous people. They were immediately suspicious of John Robinson, who subletted two rooms for his supposed work at number 86 under the name of Edwards and Co. as an estate agent. So he's like renting these rooms to use for his business.
Right.
However, the reason that they were suspicious was because Robinson had informed his landlord that he went bankrupt, he could no longer pay the room fees, and then he just left the building around May 9th. He was just like, see ya.
Okay.
So the police know how to find this character. Luckily, at the row room, they had found a bloodstained match, which I was kind of like, interesting. I don't know how that would help them, but it is a clue. And on May 21st, Chief Inspector George Cornish noticed a label with the word Greyhound stitched into a duster that was also found in the trunk. For those who don't know, a duster is a long type of coat similar to a trench coat.
Mm-hmm.
And they were originally designed for horse riders and travelers to keep dust off their clothes from the dusty roads.
Right.
So they find this duster and they follow the lead. And who happens to be working at the Greyhound Hotel? Not Robinson, but his wife.
Oh! Wow. What's up, girl?
What's up, girl? So he has a wife.
Well,
awesome.
Duh. Why else would he have brought Minnie to his office?
Yeah, true. Police took John Robinson in for questioning, and he confessed to picking up a woman at the Victoria Station, who he took back to his room. He told them the story about her rushing at him, and how she hit her head on the chair, and how he thought she was simply unconscious, and how he found her dead the next day. And then how he decided to cut up her body and shove it into the trunk because he was worried about it. Obviously, this counts for an immediate charge of murder, but there was also another element to it. So Robinson tried to claim that she died of suffocation from lying face down on the carpet for so many hours. However, the pathologist, our boy Silsbury, you know, stated that this wasn't the case at all. The asphyxiation of Minnie was actually deliberate. Yeah. So she had never fallen and hit her head.
He just strangled her.
He strangled her. Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. I don't know if they also found a head wound or not. It was kind of... There's a lot of conflicting information.
Okay.
But that is like a very known fact, is that she was actually...
Purposefully murdered.
Yeah.
Okay.
On May 23rd, Robinson was found guilty of murder and sentenced to death by Mr. Justice Swift, which I don't know if that's his real name, but it's a damn good name for a judge.
Truth. I think.
Robinson was hanged on August 12th, 1927 at Pentonville Prison in London. So that's that story. That's the Westminster trunk story.
Okay.
7 years later, on Sunday, June 17th, 1934, in a train station in Brighton, England, which is about 60 kilometers away from Westminster, another cloakroom attendant was spending his morning shift searching through piles of trunks to find one, again, that had been causing a particularly rancid smell, much like the one 7 years ago. Eventually, he found a plywood trunk that had been unclaimed for over a week. Trunk? Yeah. I don't really know.
What does a plywood trunk look like?
I think it's more like just a box. Let me look it up.
Yeah, can we take a look? Because they could have just said a box.
It is what you think.
Oh, a trunk.
It's a square trunk.
That's what I think when people say trunk. Because remember the one that we used to have?
Yes.
That's what I think of. Like
the it makes sense. And trunk. It's like, that also makes sense why you could fit a body in it. If you cut it up.
Yeah, like, absolutely a body would fit in that. I mean, we used to hide in it as children.
Yes.
If you know, you know.
If you know, you know.
Best hiding spot.
So he found this plywood trunk. Mm-hmm. It had been unclaimed for over a week. Feeling uneasy about this trunk, the cloakroom attendant, decided to alert the police.
Nice.
A bit later. Yeah, because he's like, fuck that.
It's like, I'm not touching that shit.
Yeah. Which, like,
someone come deal with
good
it.
Good gut intuition, and also don't put your fingerprints on it, you know?
Yeah.
Are they even doing fingerprints in 1934? I don't even know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think fingerprints started in the mid to late 1800s.
Okay, yeah, true. A bit later, Chief Inspector Ronald Donson opened the mysterious trunk and, to his horror, like those before him, found several layered of blood-soaked paper and cotton wool, and the worst of all, the torso and arms of a woman wrapped up as a parcel with a sash of cord. Similar to the first, the crime scene was secured and the police force got to work. So all that's in this trunk is a torso and arms. No head, no legs.
And it's wrapped up?
And it's wrapped up.
Like
a parcel.
Like mini?
Yeah.
Is this just like a copycat? Okay.
I don't know.
Or are these people like on the same fucked up wavelength?
Yeah. So you're asking the good questions along the lines of the same questions that everyone else was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Where was the rest of the woman's body?
Yeah.
Did the trunk travel along the train? They noticed it was quite heavy. Did the murderer have an accomplice? And the biggest question of them all, like you said, was this connected to the previous trunk murder? They began by getting employees at every train station to rummage through all the stored cloakroom trunks, and they were in luck. Workers at London's King Cross found another abandoned trunk, this one with a woman's legs.
Oh my god.
The officers dubbed this victim Pretty Feet, or Girl with Pretty Feet, with some believing they belonged to a dancer.
Okay.
However.
Foot fetish much?
Yes, exactly. It's really fucking weird. It's very
They could have just said woman in the trunk.
I know.
Like, if you really want to name it.
Yeah. And also, like, for those of you who know about dancing at all, dancers' feet are not pretty.
No, they're like, they're gross.
They're fucking disgusting. So, like, sorry, no offense.
No offense,
mainly
dancers.
Probably like ballet dancers, but like most dancers, like you're on your feet
all the time.
Yeah, and like using it really intensely.
Your feet into tiny ass shoes.
Yeah, I feel like you probably don't have really pretty feet. No offense, you probably really take care of them, and they're probably great. But listen, it's just weird that they were like, "Oh, pretty girl with pretty feet. She must be a dancer." It's like, okay. Anyways, while the parts of the body had been separated, they quickly believed that this was the same woman, though they couldn't be too sure.
Mm-hmm.
As the country locked their doors and slammed their shutters, horrified of this gruesome incident, the Brighton police realized it was beyond what their team could do, and they called in Scotland Yard to conduct a massive nationwide investigation. Much like the first case, they got Silsbury to carry out the post-mortem examination. As he had all the pieces of the woman except the head, he was able to put together a small portion of the narrative. Silsbury stated that the woman was 25 years old, and unfortunately, she was pregnant.
Oh.
Yeah. She had suffered a heavy blow to the head with a blunt instrument, but wait, they don't have the head. See, this is where things get confusing. Okay, let's ignore that part.
Okay.
All right.
But could he be assuming that because there's no other
wound?
Like, yeah, like she wasn't, like her torso wasn't stabbed or like.
Yeah, but she was decapitated.
But like, yeah.
Maybe the neck was,
Where was she decapitated?
I don't know. I think she was decapitated because then at the end of a lot of articles, it talks about how like the head was never found.
Right.
So, I
feel like he's probably just assuming that she hit her, like, she was, like, struck on the head or something.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, so we don't really know, but there was a clue, a physical clue that was found within the trunk.
Okay.
And it was a piece of paper with the word Ford written on it, like the company.
Shit.
The yard took this clue and they ran with it. The cases of 700 missing women were reviewed, and police checked hospitals and known abortionists, one of which they investigated more deeply, but eventually found him not guilty of committing the murder. For the first time ever, the police appealed directly to the public for help and information by using the press.
Wow.
However, this effort did not result in much, so they put their boots to the ground and they conducted door-to-door searches in Brighton. However, unfortunately, this case is still unsolved. Wow. Nothing turned up, and no one has ever discovered the identity of this woman, her story, or what happened to her.
What, that's so sad. I just don't understand how that happens.
I know.
I, like, someone missed her.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, I know.
Someone knew her.
Someone knew.
Like, she had family or friends or, like, someone.
Yeah.
Totally. Like, I don't understand how people just go unidentified forever.
I know.
It's so crazy to me.
Me too. I know, it's really sad. Yeah. And so, yeah, identity unknown.
Wow.
She's just called the Jane Doe of one of the Brighton trunk murder cases. So, you know how they're going door to door?
Yeah.
Right? And they're trying to find, like, what the heck is going on. They're searching everything. They're searching all of Brighton. And on July 15th, 1934, about a month after the very first trunk was found.
Okay.
Then they find the second trunk.
Yeah.
Now they're going door to door.
Yeah.
They're checking to try to just, like, understand this case, the second case. They find a locked room at 52 Kemp Street in Brighton during their door-to-door. They pick the lock on this room, and within it, they find an additional trunk. So they're like, maybe.
Wait, it's this her is head. In someone's house?
Yeah, it's kind of like a room and board.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, like the small townhouses, it's like someone's house. With an uneasy feeling, they open up the trunk, and not only do they find a head, but they find another body of a decomposing woman.
Oh my God.
However, the identity of this woman was very quickly figured out. This was the body of 42-year-old Violet K. Saunders. So this body was not dismembered. It was actually fully intact.
Whoa.
Just squished into the trunk.
Oh.
Which is like, what? Terrible, terrible, terrible. And they're like, what the fuck? We were trying to solve the other case.
And now we have another one.
And yeah, and now we have a third case. Like, the first one, cut and dry, we figured it out. That was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
The second one, we have no clue. And now we have this other one. So they're like, are these two linked? Are they not linked? Is it copycat? Are people just fucking losing their minds and just putting people into trunks? Like,
are people just like, wow, what a good idea. Like,
yeah.
Wow, awesome I should have thought of that first. Put this body of this person that I murdered into a trunk.
Yeah, so weird. And I wonder, too, if, like, because you know how they talked about it on the papers?
Yeah.
I wonder if that, like, inspired people in a sick and twisted, fucked up way.
Must have.
Yeah. So weird. So, a little bit about Violet before we move on. I would love to share more about her life, her upbringing, her childhood, her hopes and dreams, but unfortunately there wasn't much information that I found. However, this is what we know. Violet was a dancer.
Oh.
Which is interesting that they thought that the other person was also a dancer.
Yeah.
And she had actually toured the country in revue shows. Now, revue shows are multi-act theater performances that combine music, dancing, and sketches, and they were super popular at the time. Violet was the eldest of 16 children.
Whoa. 16?
Yeah.
Damn.
Imagine being like, I have 15 siblings. I mean, I know people do, but it's so crazy.
So crazy.
And she had been dancing professionally for most of her life alongside sex work when she needed to. In September 1933, 11 months before she was found murdered, Violet had relocated from London to Brighton with her lover, Tony Mancini, whose real name was actually Cecile Lois England. So, fake name, never a good idea. Or never good news, rather.
Right. Red flag.
Big red flag. Listen, if you're dating someone and they're using a fake name, get the hell out of there.
Why are you dating them?
Get out of there. Yeah. So this man, who I'll refer to as Tony, was much younger than Violet. Mm. He was only 26 years old, and he worked as an ice cream vendor with a record of a lot of petty crimes.
Okay, that's why he has a fake name.
Yes. Exactly.
Damn. Listen, it's okay if you want to change your name after you reinvent yourself.
Fair.
But...
that's different.
That's different. But also, was he, like, on the run, or did he serve his time for these petty crimes?
I think he was maybe in and out of jail.
okay, well, maybe he's trying his best.
Yeah, yeah. And look, to clarify, like, I don't mean, like, if you're changing your name. Like, that's all well and good. Mm-hmm. That's not a red flag. Mm-mm. If you're changing your name, I totally get that. All the power to you. Change your name. Get your own last name. Do your thing. Love it. But if you're using a fake name, I feel like that's different.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, oh, well, my name is, like, it's Bob. And then every time you go somewhere else, it's a different name. And you're a cishet white male.
Yeah.
And you're using fake names. No offense, probably bad.
Probably.
Red flag. Sorry, just needed to clarify. Listen, I'm sure you know. Okay. So Tony and Violet shared lodgings at 52 Kemp Street. I've also seen that they actually lived somewhere else.
Okay.
And then Tony ended up, like, renting out 52 Kemp Street later on.
Okay.
So they might have actually lived somewhere else. Regardless, right. They shared housing. They were in love or something. And this is where friends and neighbors shared with the police that their relationship was one of volatility, frequent arguments about money, and mutual accusations of infidelity.
Oh.
Violet was known for her heavy drinking, and unfortunately, she was plagued by insecurities around their 16-year age gap. This was a huge challenge in their relationship that was brought up often, as Tony worked odd jobs, was often out of the house, and worked during all hours of the night as a nightclub bouncer.
Okay.
The final clue and information we have about Violet's life other than her murder was that a letter had been found at the crime scene, which was addressed to her mother, who she had not seen for several years.
Oh, wow.
And within this letter, Violet tells her mother about her recent divorce from a previous guy and her remarriage to Tony.
Oh, okay.
And that's about it. That's, like, kind of as much as we know about Violet. So back to the police finding her body. Again, they call in Silsbury, and they're like, Ayo, we got another one for you, man. Mm-hmm. And they get him to carry out a postmortem examination. I've heard a few different tellings of the story, but what I know for sure is that it was obvious to the examiner that Violet, so this is where maybe it got confused with the other story, mm-hmm. Violet had been hit over the head with a blunt object.
Okay.
And that is how she died.
Right.
Of course, the police are looking for who has done this, and they realize that Violet was living with Tony Mancini, because mm-hmm. they didn't know before. Like, that little blip I told you was, like, about Violet's life, but the police have found the body, they've done the examination, and they're like, oh, she was living with this Tony guy.
Yeah.
But he was no longer at the premises.
Okay.
However, luckily, since the whole country was essentially on search for the other potential, killer of the other crime, and Tony was a crime addict, some officers actually picked him up at Eltham Road in Southeast London on July 17th due to general vagrancy, and then they brought him in for questions. And then they realized, oh, this is a guy that we're kind of, like, looking for.
Oh, wow.
He's a very strong suspect.
Okay.
So before we move on to the trial, let's travel to the night where it all happened. On or before May 11th of 1934, 2 months before Violet's body would be found, a heated dispute broke out between Violet and Tony at their Kemp Street home. Assumptions have been made that it was likely triggered by Violet's suspicions of Tony's flirtations with a waitress at a local cafe. But I also want to put Tony in the spotlight as probably being a cheating flirt, because I'm kind of sick of these stereotypes of, like, insecure and jealous woman mad at her husband for flirting.
Right.
It's like, how about you don't fucking flirt and you be a better partner to your wife?
Yeah, it's not that hard.
No. And, like, I get that, like, people have insecurities, and, like, I do, everyone does, and your partner should be helping you through those insecurities.
Yeah.
Instead of making you so fucking belligerently mad.
Yeah.
Like, this is a two-way street. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just be like, Violet was pissed off because she's insecure. Like, no. Anyway, also alcohol was involved, which is never good either. Mm-mm. So Violet probably had every fucking right to be upset at Tony on this night, and during their very heavy, heated argument, Tony decided to take a blunt object, potentially a hammer, and hit Violet over the head with it. Sarah's giving me a blank stare. I know. It's just bullshit. Later, Tony tried to claim that the hammer came into things accidentally, quote unquote.
What, you accidentally grab a hammer and hit her on the head?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because apparently they were having like a physical struggle, and then the hammer accidentally came into the struggle, which you should never be putting your hands on each other in a violent way anyway.
No.
Like, I get that this is the fucking 1930s.
Yeah.
But still. It's okay. Pretty obvious. Okay. God, this case pisses me off so much. So, he had struck her.
Yeah.
Obviously, Violet was not seen again by neighbors or friends, mm-hmm. and Tony told everyone that she had left him and gone off to Paris.
Okay, Tony.
Disgustingly, Tony gave some of Violet's belongings to the waitress girl he was flirting with.
Fuck off.
Yeah, and her name is Elizabeth Ettrell. Yeah.
Girl.
Yeah, so run this away. Is what I mean. This is what I mean by he was actually seeing someone.
Yeah.
On the side.
Right.
Obviously.
Elizabeth, run away.
Yes, yes. Elizabeth, turn the fuck around. Like, sell that shit. Make a pretty penny and get out of here.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So Violet's sister-in-law also received a telegram that read, "Going abroad, good job, sail Sunday, will write, V." But it was later figured out that this had been sent from Brighton that morning, by which time Violet was already murdered by Tony.
Yeah.
Tony then paid for different lodgings in the same building. No, sorry. Tony paid for different lodgings, so I think they were in, like, 44 Crescent something. Then he technically pays for the 52 Kemper Street. That's just something I forgot to kind of change in the story because I got really confused.
Yeah. It's confusing.
And these lodgings, which is the 52 Kemper Street, is close to the train station. And so then he orders a trunk to his new flat. He transports it by hand cart. So just like a trolley.
Mm-hmm.
He then puts Violet's body in it, not dismembered, so it's different from the other two.
Yeah.
He places it at the foot of his bed. He covers it with a cloth, and he uses it as a coffee table.
Fuck off. No.
And in spite of the smell and leaking fluids, of which visitors complained about, Tony continues to use it.
Like he'd have friends over?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck?
And he'd be like, putting his coffee on the coffee table. Yeah, I don't know. Violet left. She's in Paris. Fuck you. Yeah.
Dude, imagine, like, how would...
It's so gross. It's so gross.
How did his friends not be like, what's in your trunk? Like, what's in your coffee table?
Bruh, I think what's it was part of that era of, like, don't ask, don't tell. Don't ask questions you want the answers to.
Right.
You know, it's a very, like,
yeah.
You don't ask people about their business.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So then Tony finds out that police are going door to door, and he panics. And then that's when he goes on the run, leaving the trunk behind in the room. Mm-hmm. So now we come full circle to when Tony was caught. Initially, he claimed that he had actually just found Violet dead on his bed at their home.
Oh.
And he assumed that she was killed by one of her clients. So,
and then put her in the trunk.
Mm-hmm. So he panicked and packed up the body instead of calling it in. Which, okay. If you were actually not guilty, you would call it in. Because you would be sad that your wife has died.
Yeah, you'd be like, oh my god, I just got home and my wife is dead.
Yeah. Yes. So obviously, if you're guilty... If you are guilty, then that's when you shove someone in a trunk and mm-hmm. you don't report it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, fuck this guy, man. However, the police were able to hold Tony in jail until his trial date on December 10th, 1934. He was represented by a liberal defense lawyer who had served as a judge at some point. So he must have been pretty good because he was able to convince the jury that Violet died from a mix of drinking and morphine and then falling and hitting her head.
Wow.
Very similar to the first case of Minnie, right? There was overwhelming evidence that Tony was involved and had murdered Violet, but the case against Tony failed, and after only 2 hours of deliberation, the jury found him not guilty.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. So Tony went on to live his life for decades and decades while he robbed Violet of her life.
Oh my god.
42 years later, which is kind of ironic because that's how old Violet was. I never thought about that till now. In 1976, Tony publicly confessed to Violet's murder in the newspapers.
Why?
To try to alleviate his fucking guilt and shame. Like, no, bitch. If you didn't fucking confess, you get to hold that shit with you until you die. That is your curse. Oh, and then you're going to hell. However, the director of public prosecutions ruled that he could not be tried again. I don't know, due to like stat limitations or something, maybe? Additionally, no evidence could be found to associate him with the previous trunk murder, the girl with the pretty feet, or in connection to Minnie. So they were kind of like, our hands are tied. And so we are left with two cases that never saw justice.
Wow.
And that is the story of the triple UK trunk murders.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
It's so fucking crazy. Yeah, and very confusing and convoluted. Yeah. As you heard, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of things going on. And it's just really sad. It's a very classic, like, domestic violence.
Yeah.
So often like all of is them. The...
Femicide.
Yeah. Just like fucking misogyny.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well.
And I hope one day that, like, the second woman, I hope, like, girl with pretty feet, which I hate that her name,
identity
but.
Identity will be found.
Yeah. Yeah. I really hope so. So, through, like, DNA and stuff, I feel like it should not be that hard.
Yeah, I know.
Because it's 2026, baby. 2026 now.
Yeah, I wonder if they have anything, though.
Yeah, like anything left from it.
Yeah, they probably don't.
Fuck.
Unless What's-His-Face was smart.
Who? Oh, Silsbury.
Silsbury.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't
know. Wow.
Yep. Well,
thank you. That was crazy. And you're what welcome. A story to bring us into the new year.
We're going with some, well, I don't know what you have, but heavy hitters this 2026.
Yeah.
Heavy hitters. I have a huge list of stories to tell.
I have a list too, so we'll get cracking. I'm excited.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Thank if you, you have any questions, comments, concerns, critiques, and crackers, you can email us at
ghoulsocietypod@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Instagram at
ghoulsocietypod.
You can find us on TikTok,
ghoul.societypod.
And you can find all of each episode's resources in each episode's description.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening.
Thank
and
you,
we
everybody.
Will see you next time.
Bye.
At my locker, and all the girls keep stopping.
I don't know that one.
Really? My lip gloss is cool. My lip gloss is popping. I'm standing at my locker and all the boys keep stopping.
Is that a real song?
Yeah.
From our time?
Yeah.
Oh.
From my time, at least. Yes. It's like one of those fun school songs that that one would sing.
Right.
I think. I actually don't know what it's originally from. Let's see. Oh, it's by Lil Mama. It's from 2008.
Oh. Oh.
Do you remember?
I know the beat.
Thanks, Lil Mama.